The weather's turning colder. The fall leaves are changing color. We are approaching October 31st, Halloween, and we're going to tiptoe to the holiday by talking a little Halloween Havoc 1989. My name is Jumpin' Jay, and as always, I'm joined by Tommy Thunderdome Fierro. Tommy, good morning.
Jumpin' Jay, how are you today, my friend?
I'm doing fantastic.
I almost wanted to steal the line. I'm a huge Busted Open radio listener. I listen to it every day. Dave LaGreca is a good friend of mine. He's a part of ISBW, and it's right here in the, you know, the New York area. And it's anyone that has listened to it, it's him and Bubba Ray and Mark Henry, Tommy Dreamer, Mickey James, Thunder Rosa. It's on 6 days a week for 3 hours a day. And he always starts, LaGreca always starts off the podcast by saying, "Welcome to Busted Open on a Thursday." So I almost just stole his line saying, "Welcome to 80s Wrestling Podcast on a Thursday." And I have to like stop myself from saying it, but I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, man. I'm excited for today's topic because we're venturing away. You and I are WWF, born and bred. But we're venturing away. We're talking about NWA, a little WCW today. A lot of future Hall of Famers were involved in this particular pay-per-view, so I'm excited for today's conversation.
Yeah, man, me too. I know we were talking off the air right before we went live, talking about how, you know, I said we're kind of like coming out of our comfort zone a little bit, talking about WCW because, I'm a WWF guy, you're a WWF guy. But it's interesting because there's a lot of moving parts to this pay-per-view, and Halloween's right around the corner. So what better topic than the first ever Halloween Havoc, which was in 1989, and it was, let me get the exact date up here real quick. It was on October 28th, 1989. It was at the Philadelphia Civic Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Now, Jay, I can tell you firsthand experience growing up in this area on the East Coast and Northeast. The WCW NWA fans in Philadelphia and Baltimore and New York, I mean, they were such, and New Jersey for that matter also, such hardcore, rapid fans. If you go back and watch this pay-per-view and see how excited and into it was like a smart mark crowd in 19, and I hate to use that word, I hate that word, but it was like a smart mark crowd in 1989. In Philadelphia, like before ECW came around in 93, 94. I mean, you go back and watch this pay-per-view and you can just tell by the reaction of the crowd. Like, they're like diehard fans. And I'm interested in talking about this. The main event, like you say, called me Thunderdome Fierro, but the main event was a Thunderdome cage match. It was Ric Flair and Sting against Terry Funk and the Great Muta. You have to go back and watch this match after this podcast. It's really something else. The cool part about it is that the special guest referee for this match, remember, this is 1989, Jay, Bruno Sammartino, who was fresh off of leaving WWF at the time.
Yeah, it was a pretty big get. They gave him the moniker, the living legend of wrestling, as they introduced him to come be the special referee of that over-the-top main event. And so I'm excited to get to that point. I think the wrestling fans were so rabid for this event because back here in the late, I would say for most of the NWA WCW lifetime, fans viewed the NWA as more of pure wrestling, and they viewed kind of WWF as kind of the over-the-top circus. And I think this pay-per-view is no different. Once we get into the matches, the match length, the kind of style of wrestling that was seen on this pay-per-view, we'll understand why this was more viewed as the pure wrestling show and not the over-the-top. Because Halloween Havoc, as we know it today, as we knew it through the late 90s, early 2000s, it was very over-the-top. Decorated to the core, a lot of stage stuff. This was a very plain presentation up until that main event, up until the Thunderdome. So I'm excited to walk through this pay-per-view match by match and make it to that main event. We're going to kick the conversation off, Tommy, with a longtime friend of the show, a voice that we haven't heard in just a little bit of while. We're checking in with our good friend Danny from Butler, New Jersey. Danny, good morning.
Hey, Tommy J, always a pleasure. I know it's been a while. We missed you, brother. I know it's been you had some great topics that I wish I called in for, but the last few weeks have just been rough. I first started off with my youngest. He got a little sick, so I had a couple of trips into the hospital, and then this past week my grandma fell into the hospital, and she passed away 2 days ago. So it's definitely been a tough past couple weeks. I appreciate it, but like I said, I'm at peace. To kind of get off topic a little bit, like I think 2 weeks ago you guys had the episode on the, what you miss about the 80s most. And like I said, the last couple of days thinking about, my grandmother, like I said, she kind of got me interested with my father and my grandmother. She was born in Puerto Rico and grew up in Puerto Rico. And, knowing the culture that, Puerto Rican wrestling has, she got into it and she kind of instilled it in me. And, that's how pretty much I got my fandom, I remember, watching Saturday Night's Main Event with her, going to house shows at the Garden. She would always talk about, guys like Pedro Morales that she admired, Carlos Colon. Like I said, it kind of, I wish I would have called in, you got the episode last week with Paul Orndorff's son. That was amazing. I wish I was able to switch you guys. But like the Halloween Havoc 89, I kind of vaguely remember it a little bit. Not much. I remember like from 90 going forward, I remember more from that. I kind of vaguely remember the Thunderdome match with Sting and Flair teaming up against the Great Muta and Terry Funk, and like that was around the time, I guess, where Ric Flair and Funk had that had their little feud after Flair beat Steamboat, and then Funk ended up attacking him, and they ended up having that I Quit match, which Flair won. Halloween Havoc, if I'm not correct, wasn't that like the debut of Doom and Woman when they started the feud with the Steiner brothers, I think.
That's when
Doom, they were actually masked at that time. So I do kind of remember that somewhat. But like I said, it was all of us being WWF predominantly, that was our bread and butter when it came to wrestling. I was always still, peek into like TBS and watch, at that time, it was still under the NWA anthem, the NWA moniker, not really WCW yet, but, it turned out to be a pretty big pay-per-view going forward from that time. Like I said, you had some solid matches, you had I think the Midnight Express was involved. I think you had, Luger, I think at the time was the United States champion. I don't remember the full card, but like I said, the main matches that I remember the Thunderdome match and the Doom and the Steiner brothers, pretty much. That's my recollection of the first Halloween Havoc.
Well, first of all, Danny, both Tommy and I want to extend our grief with you, man. We know that it's never easy to lose somebody that you love and somebody that means so much to you. And so just please know that our thoughts and prayers are with you and your family. And we appreciate you calling in because we have missed your voice. And so it's good to hear from you.
That is a sexy voice, isn't it?
Danny's voice? Listen.
He's got that phone sex voice, brother.
Listen, man, not only does he have a good voice, but I will tell you, the man, I've said it before, extremely good looking. Like, I was not prepared for how good looking this guy was when I met him in New Jersey. Some guys get all the luck, Tommy.
Listen, I've been called handsome before, but never have I been, compared to a phone sex. I've never been compared to a phone sex operator. That's a first, So,
hey,
I don't know what to say about that. If that's a compliment or something else.
Danny, you've never been told by a 7'3" man that you're sexy before, have you?
Listen.
Hey man, listen, in all seriousness, thoughts and prayers to you, brother, and your family. And we're happy you called in. We miss hearing your voice, man. And I hope everything gets better, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, it's a process. Like, it's something that, you know, it's just, you know, pretty fairly new to me. I never had to, you know, experience this, like, you know, doing all the, helping out, doing all the legwork, with all this, with the grief, and then, you know, doing arrangements. So, like I said, it's definitely been a roller coaster ride, but, you know, I'm at peace. So, you know, I got to thank you guys, you know, for your thoughts and prayers. And, you know, at least we know going forward that we're going to have some meaningful football coming down the line with our Jets and Giants. So that's our hope that they keep it up.
Yeah, brother. All right, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Take care, guys. You guys have a great weekend.
You too, brother.
Thank you, brother. Yeah, my New York Giants, brother, 5-1. It's the first time, Jay, since 2016. I can be excited for football again. Usually by this time of the year, my season's over with already. So it's very exciting that it is going toward the latter part of October, and I'm excited for football again because I am a diehard Giant fan, and I'm very, very excited right now.
Listen, I'm happy for you, and I don't know if you know anything about the Minnesota Vikings, but our season is usually over by now as well. We've had very little to cheer about in our franchise history. No Super Bowl wins. If we get into the playoffs, we celebrate and we're off to a great start too. So yeah, it's a good NFL season for our two teams.
What's your record?
We're 5-1 as well.
Nice.
Yeah. And so yeah, lots to be excited about.
So this pay-per-view is Doom's debut. I would like to talk about them for a minute. I mean, what a great gimmick! Two great workers under a hood, Ron Simmons and Butch Reed, and Woman, rest her soul. It was a cool presentation, especially, remember, 1989, it's a different time frame than right now, Jay. So you have these two big, black, muscled-up, gigantic men with this white woman. I'm not saying it in a racist way, but in 1989, you weren't seeing anything like that. It was freaking cool. It was unique. It was different. What was your thoughts on Doom?
Yeah, Doom is just a very – first of all, it's a fantastic name for a tag team that's structured the way they are, because these are two incredibly huge, muscular individuals, black tights, black boots, black masks. Talk about intimidating. And at Halloween Havoc, they have Woman by their side, and they're taking on the very colorful Steiner brothers, who wear, you know, the very neon bright singlets. So
sure,
it's a great contrast visually, but just the power of Doom. I look at it as kind of like the Road Warriors kind of redefined tag team wrestling at this point in the business. They're two big, powerful guys. And so that was kind of like the new trend. People were trying to put together these power tag teams, and Doom definitely fit that bill. Incredibly intimidating looking, very powerful, and they had a great debut here against the Steiner brothers.
And listen, man, I both of those guys were fantastic performers, and you paired them together. And again, like you said, with the black pants and the black, you know, the black hood, and just big jacked up guys. And I'll tell you what, that match was really, really good. I was watching Halloween Havoc 9 at the store last week, and that's what made me think of the topic to do so. And you got to go back and watch that match too. Like that was a really, really, really good tag team match. Four incredible workers, all in their prime. Yeah, it was really good, man.
It was. I watched this pay-per-view this week leading up to it as well. And the thing that strikes me funny now as an adult that maybe as a kid I didn't catch, and maybe other adults caught it at the time too, is now, even though I know that Doom is Ron Simmons and Butch Reed, when you look at those guys, even though they're wearing masks, you can totally tell that's Ron Simmons and that's Butch Reed.
Sure.
And I don't know if other fans at the time picked up on that or if it's just because I know that's who it is. But yeah, as soon as they came down the aisle and stepped into the ring, the way their bodies, the way they move, what you can see of their faces through the mask, it was very easy to tell now that it's Ron Simmons and Butch Reed. I wonder if people knew back then or if it was just kind of like nobody really said much.
I, I bet you a lot of people didn't, because everything was such kayfabe back then. There was no newsletters, and there was no, well, there was a newsletter, but there was no, like, you know, websites and text messaging and all that stuff. So, like, I want to real quickly stick on that for a second, because I want to talk about Butch Reed. This is after he left the WWF as the Natural Butch Reed, and I was always a fan of that gimmick as well, with the Doctor of Style Slick. I thought he was extremely, extremely underutilized in the WWF.
He's one of these guys who's incredibly talented in the ring, had a tremendous look. He should have gotten a big push or be utilized more. And so you wonder if it was just, you wonder what holds guys like that back. If it's just Vince viewed him as a mid-card guy, if maybe his personality rubbed people the wrong way. But in ring, his looks, his ability, you would think a guy like that would be, yeah, pushed to the main event level in the World Wrestling Federation. So I'm with you.
I'm actually looking at Butch Reed right now as we speak in my store as we're doing this podcast. I'm looking at a WWF program with Butch Reed on the cover of it. And I remember seeing Butch Reed wrestle in the main event against superstar Billy Graham. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe it was a steel cage match at the Meadowlands Arena. But he actually main evented. I know you got the Bolsheviks. We got Butch Reed up here against superstar Billy Graham. I remember that being the main event of the show one time. So, I mean, at one point, you know, he was obviously, you know, he was being used correctly. I don't know. Like you said, and then wasn't he supposed to, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't he supposed to win the Intercontinental title and that whole situation with Honky and Ricky Steamboat and all that stuff, didn't something happen where he was supposed to be the Intercontinental champion?
You know, as you're saying that, some bells are going off in my head. I think you might be right. I think he might have been in line for the IC title, and then something either political behind the scenes happened or an injury happened. But I think you might be right. I think I've heard that he was in line to get a run with that IC belt.
I'm curious. I don't know if we'll be able to do it while we're on the air. Googling or finding out the reason why he was released from the WWF. Because, like I said, I'm looking at him here. He's on the cover of the program. I remember him main eventing a show against superstar Billy Graham. I remember that talk of him becoming the Intercontinental Champion. He had a great heater with him with Slick. Something has to happen behind the scenes. I'm not sure what it is, though. While maybe during the next call, I'm going to dig into it and see what's going on with that.
All right, you do some more research on that, and we're going to take our next call all the way to Chico, California, touch base with a good friend, Babyface Bryant. We're talking Halloween Havoc 89, brother. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'll tell you guys, I don't know if you guys remember when we talked to Slick, but Slick was able to give us the lowdown on Butch Reed, and basically Slick said that he was his own worst enemy, and that he had no-showed a couple shows, and I believe the actual night that the title was going to switch hands, it was going to be him, and he didn't show up. And then on television, they actually showed a celebration from a taping the following day where Butch Reed was one of the guys in the locker room celebrating with Honky Tonk Man.
Well, Honky Tonk, yeah.
I remember that. And so they acted like it was that same night, but Slick let us know that was filmed the next day at the I think it was Wrestling Challenge taping, but the Superstars taping that he didn't show up for. You know, the story was that Hogan said, "Well, what about Honky Tonk Man?" and they went that direction. So I totally agree.
Real quick, I'm going to cut you off, Jay. I just want to say real quickly. Brian pretty much just told us we suck at our jobs because the answer was on our podcast from the man that managed him, and we didn't know it. Thank you, Brian.
Listen,
we're going to make you the official historian of 80s wrestling, the podcast.
I'm glad one of us pays attention during this thing.
No problem. Yeah, it was when we were talking to Slick, and I'm like you guys. I think that he was a tremendous talent, and I got to see. Butch Reed three different events, and I only went to four live events, and I went to WrestleMania 3 closed circuit, And so I got to see a lot of Butch Reed in the high percentage of the shows I was at. And yeah, I think he could have fit in nicely with Slick behind him as his mouthpiece. And he could speak himself, but I mean, that would have been a combo that could have had a great IC title run in WWF, similar to Honky Tonk in my mind. And so I believe he left shortly after WrestleMania 4. So he was there from basically, I think it was July, August of 86 up until, you know, March, late March of 88. But yeah, I was actually just watching the other day, and I think I saw that. I think they have that Meadowlands cage match with superstar Billy Butch Reed headlining, and superstar, you know, hits him and crawls out the cage door to win the match. So yeah, he had a good run. As far as Halloween Havoc 89, I'm like you guys, I'm like Danny, I was WWF and didn't even, I don't believe they even offered that in my area as a choice of something I could watch. So I was, you know, unable to see too much NWA, and I watched, you know, kept an eye on it in the magazines. But for the places that had a choice, that was a real time period where they had an opportunity to pick up some viewership, because you had SummerSlam right before that. You had Hogan and Beefcake up against Savage and Zeus. And Zeus, to me, was so much gimmick more than talent. And then, you know, you had a Saturday night's main event that was filmed on Halloween and shown in November. But, you know, the Survivor Series, Zeus was involved in that again. So NWA was pretty smart with taking a holiday at an event, you know, not doing it on the actual day when you've got kids going out and getting candy and stuff, but doing it the 28th. And taking a slot where WWF, you know, didn't challenge him like they had challenged him in 88 for Bunkhouse Brawl, and they went head-to-head for, you know, Survivor Series in 87 and Survivor Series, you know, on Thanksgiving 88. But, you know, this was an opportunity for WCW to crawl in there and take a hold of something that WWF wasn't, you know, basically utilizing, which was that Halloween holiday. So that was a real smart move to kind of grab that event. And then when you're talking Terry Funk, Sting, Great Muta, Ric Flair, it's hard to argue with the talent level you've got on the main event level in kind of a new thing, that big Thunderdome cage match where it's you know, going a couple of feet beyond the actual ring to hold them all in there. So I'll give them a lot of credit for jumping in there with something that, you know, they had the only eyes in the business were on them at that. So that was real smart booking there. And, you know, I watched a little bit of that match this morning. I've seen it years ago, but not as big an NWA guy as you guys. So it'll be interesting to hear from other guys on the show who were, you know, invested in the product back then. It's, you know, Toto with Tom calls in, or somebody that was invested in NWA. It'd be interesting to hear what they think. But, you know, when you look at the Road Warriors and going against Sid Vicious and Dan Spivey, which were massive, and you look at the main event and taking, you know, Bruno Sammartino and having him be the special referee, there's a ton of talent. And there's that, like I say, there's this smart move of getting in to a niche where the only eyes are on their product. So, you know, Tommy, as a promoter, I'm sure you appreciate WCW's foresight or NWA's foresight to do something out of the, you know, out of the comfort zone there.
Sure. And then also you made mention of how they would, you know, they were smart, because if you remember, was it WrestleMania 4 that they ran something the same night, Clash of the Champions, or was that WrestleMania 3? But I know one of them.
It was the very first Clash of the Champions. They ran head to head against WrestleMania 4, but it was on PBS for free. So, you know, that's it's like when the WWF they went ahead and did Royal Rumble for free on the USA Network the same day as the Bunkhouse Brawl that same year, you know, in January, I forget, January 15th, January 16th, somewhere in there, where WWF is like, let's go head to head, but give it away for free. And then WCW said, you know, we'll, we'll do the same thing against Mania. So it was such a battle in 88. And this seems like finally a little soft spot where WCW was able to get a card in there and not be direct head-to-head competition where they're fighting for viewers. But yeah, good call. That's when Sting's debut was, as far as really not debut, but that's where he was, you know, made a star, is that that time limit draw at Clash of the First Class of the Champions head-to-head against WrestleMania IV.
We're gonna label this, Jay, and maybe Face Brian, the 80s wrestling wars. How about that? Sounds like a little ring to it, right?
Yeah, man. I mean, they, like I say, head to head, and good for them to do an event like that. And you know, it's definitely out of all of our comfort zones. So it's interesting watching that event. Yes, sir.
Before you go, real quickly, what was your take on King Bruno Sammartino, who was the WWF and WWWF for so many years? And I mean, this is 1989, so I mean, he was. In those recent years, he was a broadcast partner with Vince McMahon. What was it like for you, as primarily a WWF fan, seeing such a huge icon from the WWF in the main event as a referee for WCW? It was pretty groundbreaking at the time, I thought. You didn't really see that much back then, you know?
No, it's a little strange. I mean, I think he stopped broadcasting on Superstars and wrestling in WWF. It was more around 87, and I know that he had wanted to push, you know, have his son David pushed, and that was like an on and off again thing where David really never got a huge strong push in WWF. So I'm sure that, I know that there's been hard feelings, or there were hard feelings for a long time. So I'm sure it was, you know, it was a kind of a little grudge thing where he, I'm sure, liked the payday, but more than that, he probably liked sticking it to him a little bit after leaving not on the best terms with his son, not getting the success he'd hoped for and whatnot. So yeah, it was definitely interesting seeing Bruno
I got a little trivia for you too, Brian. I've had, and Jay, I don't know if you know this, I know you might, but I've had both Bruno Sammartino and David Sammartino at past wrestling conventions.
Nice, nice. What did you? I'm sure that they were both pleasant to deal with. If I had to guess, I'd say that they were extremely professional. But what can you
Bruno
tell us about those experiences?
Well, I mean,
yeah, class
he was probably,
act, right?
Absolutely, and I know this is a little off topic, it's about WCW Halloween Havoc, but real quickly, when I was younger, Brian and Jay, I kicked myself in the ass so much, because back then, like, I'm 21, 22 years old, and I'm doing all these events with all these big guys, like, I never took a picture with anyone. I didn't want the wrestlers back then to think that I was a fan or a mark taking a picture with them. And now that I've been in the business a long time, I look back at it, like, I go out of my way now. If I don't know if we're friends on Facebook or whatever, I go out of my way to take pictures with every single person I work with now, because I've worked with so many guys in the past that I never had an opportunity to take a picture with, because I was an idiot. Like Bruno Sammartino, the guy's the biggest name I ever had on any of my conventions, one of the biggest icons ever in wrestling, and I don't have my picture with him. Bobby the Brain Heenan, I used him multiple times. Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, I used him multiple times. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Sid Lou Albano, Nikolai Volkov, George Animal Steel. I mean, all these iconic names, and I never took a picture with any of them. So that's my one big regret is throughout my years promoting. If anyone asks me, like, you have any regrets, my one regret would be never taking pictures with all these guys I had. I don't have no memories on it other than in my head. But I wish if there was one picture I could have taken, to circle back around to the beginning again, it would have been with Bruno, because, I mean, it would have been awesome to hang that picture in my store of me and Bruno from my wrestling convention. So I make a point of making sure I take a picture everywhere I go with anyone I work with now.
Well, the question I'd have for you is, if we're looking at that main event with Ric Flair and Terry Funk and Sting and Great Muta, if you could sign one of those four guys to the next wrestling convention, any one of them would be a home run. And I'm sure Flair's price is astronomical, as is Sting being with AEW. But and Terry Funk, I know he's getting up there health wise and may not be in the best spirits or shape to do it. But I'm sure any of those guys would be just, you'd be on top of, you know, just so overjoyed to be able to get one of those guys at the next convention if you're able to.
I'm sure Terry Funk, his health's not that great, so he's not traveling. But I mean, I can probably definitely get the other three guys. It's a matter of, you know, budgeting. You know, I mean, it's a lot of moving pieces to it. So I mean, yeah, I would be interested in any of those guys, obviously. And I'm actually working on some names as we speak. Again, the next 80s wrestling con is going to be and Babyface Brian, you have enough notice to save up your pennies, quarters, nickels, dimes, and dollars. May 6th of next year at the Menin Sports Arena, 80s Wrestling Con 2023.
Definitely. Yeah, you'll have to hire me and have me help you out in some way. room and board and a ticket, right?
Yeah, you know what we can do? We can have like a family feud type of game with teams from the listeners from Indies Wrestling Con. So like you have a team of five against another team of five, and you're like the, you know, you're the Ray Combs of it, and you ask questions, and we call it pro wrestling family feud. I think I'm going to book that for next year's Indies Con. I'm being serious.
Right on.
No, that's right, a on. Fantastic idea.
And as we talk about, you know, all the guys you've gotten to meet, just want to thank you guys for the opportunity to talk to all these great guys. You know, I've been able to talk to Demolition and Slick and Steve Lombardi and Barry Horowitz and Bushwhacker Luke and all these wonderful personalities I never thought I'd have a chance to talk to in this world, and got to do it through your show. So thank you for all the opportunities, you know, in the last year that I've been calling in. And so, like I say, I'll stop hogging your time and listen to what you guys have to say the rest of the show. But thanks for all that you guys do on here.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks, Brian. Take care, man. Gentlemen. Have a great week.
You too. Bye-bye.
So, Tommy, Brian brought up SummerSlam 89, which was ran the same year as Halloween Havoc 89. And he mentioned that maybe SummerSlam was a little more cartoony, a little more over the top, where Halloween Havoc 89 maybe was a little more pure wrestling. And that got me thinking, man. So let me lay this fact on you. The average match time for SummerSlam 89 was about 10 minutes. Each match lasted, on average, 10 minutes. Now, the longest match was a tag team match with the Brainbusters against the Hart Foundation, which went 16 minutes and 23 seconds. The shortest match was Mr. Perfect and the Red Rooster at only 3 minutes and 21 seconds. So quite the discrepancy there. But on average, each match on that card lasted about 10 minutes. On the flip side of that, at Halloween Havoc, the average match time was 14 and a half minutes. The longest match being the main event, which went 23 minutes and 46 seconds. The shortest match was Tommy Rich defeating the Cuban Assassin in 8 minutes and 29 seconds. But again, the average match length, 14 and a half minutes compared to only 10 on the WF side. Does that give indication that NWA, WCW was leaning more on pure wrestling and WWE was leaning more on showmanship? What's your thought as a promoter on an average match time of 14 and a half minutes?
I would agree with you there. I think that and that's why when the NWA or WCW came up this way at that time frame, you got such diehard, rabid, hardcore fans because they were into the wrestling aspect of it more than the cartoonish. I hate to use the word cartoonish, but the entertainment aspect of it that the WWF was doing at the time. It was an alternative, just like when ECW came around, it was an alternative. Do you have that information in front of you? I'd be curious to know how many matches were on SummerSlam. I know there was 8. I'm looking at the Halloween Havoc lineup right now
there was,
for that year. I know there was 8. There's 8 for Halloween Havoc. How about for SummerSlam?
10 for SummerSlam 89.
Well, there you go. I mean, that right there, and I'm sure, you know, I was there live to see it, but without seeing it on TV right now, I'm sure there was backstage stuff and all that stuff. I mean, it's a lot of different factors. But, yeah, I mean, WCW Halloween Havoc 1989, especially in being in Philadelphia, it was definitely geared more towards the wrestling aspect from then, you know, the entertainment aspect. But, yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, when I do my independent shows, just to give you a peek behind the curtain, you know, I do them typically on a Friday night. So, and I cater towards, you know, children and families. So if I start my show at, and this is the one thing I'm proud of as far as being able to get the timing down, because when I first started coming back last year, you know, the shows were getting over past 10 o'clock and I would see, you know, people leaving as, you know, the second half was going on, just, you know, not because they didn't like the show, it's because, you know, it's getting late and the kids have to, you know, go to sleep. So like, I cut back on my times of the matches. So, I mean, now I got it down almost to a T where, you know, 9:30, 9:45, the shows are getting over now as opposed to, you know, 10 o'clock, 10:15. And that time frame is really, really important because, you know, if you're at home watching it as a kid and it's, you know, for years, right? And pay-per-views were on Sunday nights, right? I know they're switching over to Saturdays now, but for all those years, and I'm not sure, that's 1989, so I'm just saying in general, kids have to go to sleep and go to school the next day. So the timing of the show, especially when you're on pay-per-view and when you do Monday Night Raw and you got segments and commercials, and like, I mean, timing is crucial for everything. So, yeah, I mean, I know that I kind of went in a circle there, but I'm just saying timing is so important when it comes to a match and how long the match is. And you just have to keep in mind everything else that has to go on. It's a lot of moving parts, more so than fans or even us know.
And we're going to jump into some more calls, Tommy, but an interesting thing, too, is Halloween Havoc, with the 8 matches, had a runtime of 2 hours and 50 minutes, whereas SummerSlam, with 2 additional matches, 10 matches on the card, actually finished faster at a runtime of 2 hours and 36 minutes. And so less matches, but a longer pay-per-view. Very interesting. We got 2 callers waiting on hold. The first one, just an old friend stopping by to say hi for the second time, Danny from Butler. Welcome back.
Hey, guys, listen, I know I just called, but Tommy, I just wanted to mention to you, just off topic a little bit, I actually like enjoying the topic, but that was a pretty tribute to the British Bulldog when you put on the 80s Facebook. That was that little whole segment with your buddy that helps you out with 80s wrestling. That was a pretty cool conversation he had with Davey Boy Smith's daughter. I just wanted to touch base on that. And then, you know, since you guys already talked about Butch Reed, I'm the one that actually brought that up to Slick back in December about the whole IC title thing, about him, you know, apparently not no showing, and you know, he pretty much, Slick said that he pretty much he marched to the beat of his own drum when it comes to, you know, showing up. If he didn't have a ride to a certain town, you know, he just wouldn't care. You just wouldn't show up. So he kind of was his own worst enemy as far as, you know, not getting that big push, and it ended up going to Honky Tonk instead.
Very, very interesting. Yeah. I now that you say it, now I remember Slick being on the radio show. I remember him saying that. And Danny, thank you so much for calling back and letting us know that. And real quickly, I want to make mention, Jay, and everyone out there listening, the interview that Danny is talking about that we posted on our Facebook page a couple of days ago, 80s Wrestling on Facebook, Ace Darling, a former standout top independent guy in this area in the 90s and early 2000s, has started his own YouTube show called Wrestling Then and Now. So if you go on YouTube and check it out, just type in Wrestling Then and Now, and he's been doing these awesome interviews lately. with tons of different guys. He actually did Travis Orndorff before we did Jay, and it was a really awesome interview. He just did Kevin Sullivan. He did Davey Boy Smith's daughter. There's a ton of Jim Brunzel, a ton of content. Great interviews from Ace Darling, Mike Moraldo, on Wrestling Then and Now on YouTube. So definitely go on there, subscribe, and check that out.
Yeah, there's so much material that 80s wrestling fans were so hungry for all of it. And so, yeah, if you have somebody that you know that's out there interviewing and getting great stories, our listeners are going to be thrilled to have another outlet to go check out some behind-the-scenes stuff and just some candid interviews with some people that impacted the business and our lives as fans.
He's killing it, and I know our next caller is Toto Watam. You can get him on now. Toto Watam has actually been texting me how much he's been enjoying these interviews as well. We can get his take on that. Again, it's Wrestling Then and Now on YouTube. Toto Watam, what's going on, man?
Hey, guys, bring back Ace. Bring back Ace.
I talked to Tommy about that a few weeks ago, if he's ever going to step back into the ring.
Well, he will be the special guest GM for the night next Saturday when ISPW makes its debut in Avenel, New Jersey. And tomorrow, Jay, we'll talk about this later on the show. Tomorrow is ISPW Harvest Havoc. And what a fitting name for the show, considering today is Halloween Havoc 89 here on 80s Wrestling Podcast. Tom, I knew you grew up a big NWA/WCW fan from that time frame, and the Halloween Havoc coming up there is one of your favorites.
Yeah, it was a special pay-per-view because it, like, as Brian the Brain was saying, it kind of reminded me of, like, Survivor Series. You know, it had a theme to it. Getting to the times that you guys were talking about, you were saying that the matches were a lot longer. And I agree with you. The NWA was always about wrestling, so the matches were longer. But if you look at this particular card, there was a lot of tag team matches on here. And I think when you run a tag team, there was even a six-man. So when you run those type of matches, I think they're going to require more time anyway to tell a story. Do you agree?
Absolutely. I think that's a very fair point. Yes, there was six-man tags. There's a number of tag team matches. And you need time to tell a good story. And even in your singles matches, you had guys that could just go. And I watched this pay-per-view, and the matches didn't feel long because they were done so well that you were engaged with the action in the ring.
And look at the tag teams that were in there. Arguably the four greatest tag teams of all time, the Midnight Express, the Road Warriors, the Steiner Brothers, and I'm missing one. Oh, the Fabulous Freebirds. I mean, having those four tag teams in a pay-per-view, and I'm not even counting Doom because Doom was okay. They weren't great. But those four tag teams are probably four of the greatest. Like if you wanted to put a top 10 list, I know they would be in there for sure.
Yeah, no argument there. This whole card was actually, as you go back and watch it, was full of Hall of Fame caliber people in the prime of their life. When I saw Terry Funk come out for the main event, Terry Funk is in phenomenal shape here in 89. And you just got the talent on this card was kind of overwhelming. As I watched it back.
Yeah, the announcing was also top level. Bob Caudle was in the broadcast booth with Jim Ross. You had Gary Michael Capetta doing ring announcing, and even Gordon Solie was like the interviewer. So, I mean, really, you're looking at top names in this wrestling industry. And, yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the Halloween Havoc, I think, a couple years later when it was Cactus Jack against Vader. I think that was probably one of my more favorite ones. But, yeah, I always enjoyed it. And we're going to see it this weekend, too, with NXT, Halloween Havoc. And I'm actually going to give it a look because one of Tommy's own is going to be involved with NXT, the Prince of ISPW.
Oh, yeah, man. Dave LaGreca, they announced it on Tuesday, Jay. Dave LaGreca is going to be on the pre-show for WWE's NXT Halloween Havoc this Saturday. I'm super, super pumped for it. Yeah, the only thing that sucks is that he was supposed to be at our ISBW show tomorrow. He's the manager of Rick Recon. Unfortunately, you know, WWE has to fly him out there. He's actually doing a live Busted Open Saturday morning from the Performance Center. He's going to be doing interviews with NXT guys on the show on Saturday morning, and then he's going to be on the panel for the NXT pre-show at nighttime. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to check that out too, man.
Hey, Jay, I was thinking about you the other day because Vice had a great entry on AWA Wrestling, and I was just wondering or hoping, did you get a chance to see it?
I did see it. I did watch it. I'm going to be honest with you. I felt like it left a little bit to be desired because I have such a special place in my heart for the AWA, and I get it. The guys are sitting at the round table. They're telling the far-out, wacky, over-the-top stories. And so while I enjoyed it, at the end I felt like maybe it could be have been done a little differently, but that could just me sticking up for, you know, the Minnesota AWA.
I agree with you 1,000%. I felt the same way.
Oh, good. I read great reviews on it online, and I was like, I must be just me, but I'm glad that you felt similar.
Yeah, it's no different than Table for Three or, you know, there was another show that WWE did on Peacock. I'd like to know more of the history rather than the stories. I mean, you can watch a shoot. You can watch a shoot interview anytime you want on YouTube, or you can get them. You can buy them, right? So the question I have for you, and you know, I'm just asking you because you're a fan. And Tommy, I mean, I'll ask you the same question because it's regarding Hulk Hogan. So the way I heard it, you know, Hogan went to the WWF and Vince McMahon overtook the territory eventually, right? The AWA had to go out of business. So my question is, if things didn't go that way and if Hogan decided to stay with the AWA, do you think that Vern Gagne would try and do what Vince tried to do by overtaking the territory? I mean, he had a larger regional coverage than the WWF did, right? He went from the Midwest all the way to California up to Winnipeg. Do you think they would have done the same thing Vince would have done?
I'll answer first if that's okay, Jay.
Go for it.
I don't think so because I just watched this documentary the other day on A&E, and I'm catching up on the A&E documentaries, the WrestleMania 1, which was absolutely fantastic, and it told the backstory pretty much how it all came together and how, Vince McMahon had the vision of, you know, connecting rock and wrestling and just, you know, getting in part of pop culture. And I think Hulk Hogan became so big because of, MTV and because of, the whole rock and wrestling connection. And I just don't think that Vern Gagne, not that he didn't understand that concept, but I think that I don't think that he would have went that route, and I think that vision is what made Hulk Hogan so huge, is because he was, MTV was the hottest thing in the world. Mr. T was the hottest thing in the world. Cyndi Lauper was the hottest thing. Like, it was just the right formula, and it was magic. And I just don't know if Vern Gagne would have went in that direction. I don't think he would have. So I think that Vince McMahon's vision of what he wanted the WWF to be, I think, is what made Hulk Hogan so big.
So, Jay, before you answer,
That's
interesting. That's interesting what you just said, Tommy, because I think it was during that show that they mentioned that Hogan didn't get over at first, right, with the WWF, went to Japan, then went to AWA as a heel, managed by Johnny Valiant, and then Greg Gagne said, this guy is not a heel. He just came off Rocky, and we need to make him a babyface. So they started showing vignettes of Hogan beating up Sylvester Stallone in the movie Rocky III. And he said that is what helped turn Hogan into a superstar in the AWA. So I understand what you're saying, like Vince's vision probably, was not going to be matched. But they kind of did have an idea of what they had with Hogan. And even though it wasn't what they wanted to do because they were based upon real-life characters, they did use Hollywood to get him over originally. And I just thought that was interesting. Jumpin' Jay, what do you think?
My two cents on it, for what it's worth, is I would believe, from what I know about Vern, that he was a little more old school, and so he may have been a little more hesitant to try to take it nationwide like Vince Jr. did. But I do think his son Greg might have been able to spur the movement, kind of like Vince Jr. did after he took it over from Vince Sr. I think maybe in the hands of Greg, the AWA could have seen some significant growth. I think Vern was one of that old school mentality where you had to pay your dues. He ran his training camp in an unheated barn. And so I think he was very old school, pay your dues, be a good athlete first, wrestling over showmanship, where I think maybe the next generation and Greg could have seen more of the Hollywood, the push, the sizzle. But that's just my take from an outsider. I'd love to hear what you have to say, Toto or Tom.
I mean, it just struck me because I was reading Tito Santana's book. Tito Santana is the commissioner for ISPW. And I was reading his book, and he was, you know, basically giving his portrayal of his days in AWA. And it was very interesting just to hear how close the AWA was to having, you know, Hogan as their champ. And, you know, if they did, who knows where history would have led. I don't know. And by the way, before I get off and you guys can talk about tomorrow night's show, which I'm very excited about, by the way, can't wait to see the superstars of ISPW in action again. I was talking to Meltzer last night. He gave Travis Orndorff high marks for last week's episode, as well as Toto with Tom. That's all I want to say. Toto with Tom, out.
Nice. Dave Meltzer's listening.
Thank you, Dave. Tommy, before we transition to what's going on in your world, we're rounding the corners here. And so I do want to get your honest opinion on the main event of Halloween Havoc 89, this Thunderdome, supposedly electrified cage. In my opinion, it seemed a little, I think the idea was unique and intriguing. But when you finally saw it and they kind of had the top of the cage decorated with like some Halloween decor, cobwebs and the spooks and all that stuff, maybe seemed a little too hokey of a presentation when you actually got down to see it. I'd love to hear your impression of what that main event actually was.
It was a mush. It was a monster mush. It was a great I'm picturing you as before the doors open in the arena climbing that fucking cage and decorating it with Halloween garland and stuff like that, you know?
Presentation, I think, didn't live up to the hype is all I'm saying.
Yeah, it is what it is. I enjoyed it. You know, it wasn't the big blue steel cage, but at least they stepped out. Here's the thing. They stepped outside of their comfort zone in 1989, doing something unique and different that hasn't been done before. So you got to give them credit for that, you know?
No, it's always good to try something new. And this is by far not the worst idea WCW will come up with, as we know. But yeah, I thought the presentation was a little more hokey than I was expecting with the talent level that was in that main event. But it made for a very memorable event, and here we are talking about 1989 in the year 2022. So they did something right.
Sure, man. And overall, like I said, it was a really good pay-per-view. I know we kind of went all over the place on today's episode. That happens a lot with us, but we start talking about one topic and then it leads to something else and something else. But yeah, I would definitely, it's the Halloween season. You go to WWE Network, check out the Halloween Havoc 1989. It's a really fun show. And tomorrow, ISW having a really fun show, Harvest Havoc at Hapakon High School in Hapakon, New Jersey. The main event will be for the ISPW World Heavyweight title, Justin Carino defending against Bull James. What was scheduled to be a grudge match with the superstar Danny Morrison against Maven is now being switched. Unfortunately, I received word yesterday from Danny that he is injured and he's going to be out for at least till early next year, which as a promoter, you never want to hear that because he is my Hulk Hogan. He is my top guy. And I had a lot of things in the works planned around him. So it threw a huge monkey wrench into everything I had coming up. So I'm in the midst of figuring that out. But he will be there tomorrow to announce his mystery replacement against Maven. So, again, that's tomorrow, Hapakon High School, Hapakon, New Jersey, 7:30 p.m. It's the benefit Cold Nose, Warm Heart Dog Rescue. So if you're in the New Jersey area, a fun Friday night out. It'll be a hell of a show, and I'm looking forward to it, man.
Well, all the best to you. Keep me informed as to what's taking place, who's the winners, who's the losers, and where it all leads, man. I always love to hear the results.
Thank you, man. And we had our Halloween party last week here at the Wrestling Collector with Doink and Dink, and it was a great time. It was a lot of fun. Tiger Jackson, Little Dink, they showed up together already because they came from a convention. So they pulled up in their outfits and just seeing them walk in, and Little Dink walking in, terrible. You have to be there to see it. It was a lot of fun. Our next signing here at the store at the Wrestling Collector in Stockholm, New Jersey, will be on Saturday, November the 5th, with Raven. So I'm excited to have him. And like I said, this weekend, tomorrow night, we have ISW Harvest Havoc at Hapakon High School, Hapakon, New Jersey. And I got some other stuff working, Jay, some big, big stuff. And we're going to talk about that next week here on the show. Next week on the show, I'm working on getting the writer, the Last Match musical, on the show, the one that created the content, because we've got a lot of big things cooking with that as well. So we're going to probably do that next week here on the show.
That would be fantastic, because on my social media, on my Instagram, as I scroll through the feed, there's a lot of people talking about the Last Match that I didn't even realize was involved. And so it's very cool to see the momentum that is starting to pick up when it comes to the Last Match musical. I think it's going to be even bigger than it is now, and I think it's going to be bigger than anybody anticipated, Tommy. So I'm excited to see this thing keep rolling down the tracks.
Yeah, man. So I'll probably get that confirmed later today. The phone's ringing off the hooker at the Wrestling Collector, so we're going to call it a day, and we'll talk to you next week right here on 80s Wrestling, the podcast.